Mama, I'm Gosia's Carrot, and this is the Firestarter Mom podcast, the show where we feature inspiring conversations with Firestarter moms and experts on motherhood identity shift, finding our inner fire back, and feeling adequate and empowered as moms and women. Welcome! Out of everything we hear about parenting styles, what about being a parent who is confident in their own way, who stands in their truth, and who lets their inner wisdom and inner guidance be the best possible compass for parenting their very own child? It is empowering, isn't it? Because it teaches us to trust ourselves and to see in us, moms, more than we are. And I'm really, really excited because that's what this episode is about. Today, I speak to my lovely guest, Keely Pierce, a relationship coach and parenting expert, stepmom, and a mom of two. She helps families strengthen their communication, build trust, and foster a deep sense of connection so they can achieve true happiness and harmony in their households. Her aim is to create the ultimate dream team where every member can thrive, and she's committed to making this dream a reality for as many families as possible. This conversation was rich, insightful, and so empowering. Hope it will inspire confidence in you as a mom and help you embrace your inner wisdom and trust your unique way as a parent. Let's get started. Keely, welcome to the show.
Hello, good evening. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yes, that's a pleasure to have lovely guests and to talk about everything around motherhood, helping us moms feel confident. And today I thought it would be wonderful to talk more about, of course, not only your journey of becoming mom and how you found it, but also your perspective on how to be a confident parent as a relationship coach and parenting expert as well. So that I think it would be wonderful to have more insights and your wisdom.
Lovely. Hopefully I've got some wisdom to share. So yeah,
definitely. Great. So how I like to start the show is to ask my guests about their journey, before and after, I say it. So can you tell us a bit about your journey? Who were you before becoming a mum?
Okay, yeah. Before becoming a mum, I was Miss Independent and very much kind of didn't really know where I wanted to go career-wise. And I ended up in a bar, and the man who ran the bar said that he didn't have a female manager, or wouldn't, we'll rephrase that, wouldn't have a female manager. And at that point in my life, I wanted to become a teacher, and I was putting off kind of a year of university to then kind of go and do my teaching degree. And then actually I was like, who does this man think he is to tell me that you can't have a female manager? So I then basically put my entire career on hold to prove this man wrong and told him, obviously, one, it's very much illegal, and two, I wasn't leaving until I become his first female manager. And that kind of shaped my life, to be honest, because then I fell into the whole world of hospitality and pub trade. And then I become his female manager, obviously. And then I actually went and ran his other pub, his sister pub. And that's when I met my partner at the time. And we were headhunted for another pub and went and run kind of pubs, really. So it became life. And anyone who's kind of worked in the trade will very much probably understand that pub work isn't a job. You don't necessarily walk away. It kind of consumes you, your social life, your relationships and everything kind of become everything that you do. And running the pub and our own pub, it was very much 16 hours a day, 7 days a week when we got it kind of running off the ground. And it was just busy, 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 which was great because like thrive or busy and kind of running your own ship. And then kind of money, you just have money to be able to spend it willy-nilly. And then we decided that the next stage in our life was to have a baby.
So when you look back at this time before, very often when I ask this question to my guests, they often describe what they were doing, what was happening for them. But I'm always so curious to find out really what is it that they valued at the time? What set them on fire then? Who were they at heart? What would you say about this?
I say at heart, free spirit. I think running your own business at, I mean, I'd finished my business degree whilst taking on a pub. So I was just strong, independent, like nobody could tell me what to do because I was in control of my own destiny and free, complete free spirit. Because if I wanted to do something, I just did it. And I am a woman of my word. And if I say I'm going to do something, I will absolutely do it. So yeah, very much kind of free spirit and that kind of tenacity to see things through. Yeah, that kind of is, and that's kind of the core values that I have now, even coming back in a whole journey. So it's kind of nice to come back to your roots once you kind of identify them.
Oh, that's really interesting because when we become moms, so much is changing, isn't it? We reevaluate things. So what you just said that you actually come back to it and actually stay with your core is really good, it's really solid. So I would love to find out more about what happened when you became mom. How did you find the transition
So
into
the
motherhood?
transition, I think everybody gives parenthood and motherhood like a real glossy, like beautiful, I don't even know what word to even put on it, this like magical thing, should we say. And everybody's got advice and everybody, oh, you should try this and this and babies love this. And you go out and you buy, I don't know, like depending on if you find out the sex, and we didn't find out, but you know, you still go and buy neutral things, and you know, you kind of get this excitement, don't you, of having a new mini human that comes into your world. And then the reality, I think, is very, very different, very different. And I know we've spoken before about, you know, the transition and the journey. And I think with my first child, more so, it was a wake up call in the sense of I come home and I had my baby in the like car seat. And I put her on the sofa and I looked at her and I was like, oh shit, like I've got to like look after this thing now. Like this is, it's no longer a fairy tale and like make believe to the reality. And then I thought, oh, okay, I need to go to the shop. And yes, my husband was very much there and could have gone to the shop, but because of that Miss Independent and don't rely on anybody else, that actually was like a huge wake up call for me, because I was like, oh, I can't just go to the shop anymore. Like, I now have something that is attached to me that I need to be mindful of, and a very simple task is no longer simple. And that I think was the very first kind of wake up of, wow, here we go. Kind of the journey begins, and kind of that process into the change.
Yeah, so when you look at challenges, we know the term matrescence, which is the transition into motherhood, and it's just so much about physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, cultural impact, so much, right? So when you look at this aspect, how was your transition? How did you feel about even like the changes in your body, and then whether you recognize yourself in the mirror or not, things like this. And how did you feel actually emotionally? How did you feel in motherhood? How actually do you find motherhood right now as well?
Okay, so are you ready? Buckle in your seatbelts.
Yeah,
So
I am.
I literally only found out about matrescence after my second child. So I've got two children. Liliana is 11 and Jude is nearly 2. So there's a 10-year gap between them. And I never understood that matrescence was an actual thing. And I always felt very negative that if I ever spoke to anybody that was pregnant, or especially a first child, because I think that's a huge transition. Yeah, it always felt like I kind of come from the aspect of, look, I need to like give you the reality, like your life as you know it will be no more. And it would always appear that I was like doom and gloom, and I felt very negative. And I'm not really a negative person, but I'm an authentic person, and I'd like people to like know the truth. And then all of a sudden, when I was introduced to matrescence, everything just made sense. And it was like, oh my God, like I'm not negative. It's an actual thing. It's like reality. It's normal. And then I just think it should be so much more out there for women to truly understand that they are normal and everything they're experiencing is completely normal. And so if I go back to Liliana when I had no idea and it was all just completely new, then that loss of identity was, I think the word catastrophic is probably appropriate, because being such that resilient, independent, career focused, and we lived in the pub, we run the pub, like, you're putting in blood, sweat, tears all day, all night, and then all of a sudden you're taken away from that. And although it was our pub, I still come away because I have a human that I need to look after. And obviously at that late stage of pregnancy, you're not physically able or anything else. And so,
Hey, we are back recording because we had some technical issues. Wi-Fi and happens. So where were we actually? We were talking about Matrescence journey and identity shift. So
yes, so I
yes.
think I said about buckling in your seatbelts, but yeah, I
Yeah.
think the transition for me, and kind of from running pubs and being that strong, independent, and kind of fearsome woman who doesn't need anybody else, to then just something as simple as going to the shop really just triggered that time where it was like, wow, okay, anything simple is not simple anymore, and I now need to either, kind of really get to grips with asking for a bit more help, as in, no, actually, husband, can you go to the shop for milk? And that was quite hard for me. And not only that, and the identity is from working and always having my own money. Statutory sick pay, not sick, definitely not sick when you're pregnant. Well, some people are, but
Maternity pay,
that kind of maternity pay, yeah, is a drop in the ocean. And I mean, I don't know how normal people survive in general, let alone when you do have good disposable income. And yeah, then it was like, okay, so am I now meant to ask my husband for money? Like, am I, because that's not okay with me, that's not comfortable. So again, it was like a huge batter into that identity of who I am. So the only way around it was that actually we agreed that I would have a wifey wage. And I know that sounds silly, but it was kind of a mental way that I could get around it, that, the mentality of relying on somebody else. So I had this wifey wage that just come into my bank once a week, and then I got to do whatever I needed to do with that money. So that kind of was like a hard part on the identity side. But I think then when you look at kind of the physical changes in your body, again, you've got the pregnancy side, and especially with your first, where you have like a baby photo shoot sometimes, which I did, because it was like one of those things where I'd put it in a memory box, because it's a process women don't go through a lot. Some people do it once, some people never do it, and other people like to do it kind of numerous times. But for me, I knew it was going to be kind of once or twice. So to have those photos, that change in my body. And I think when I was pregnant, I felt the most confident ever, because you can be fat, you can eat what you like, you can wear really tight clothes, and everyone can look at you and just know that you're pregnant. So they don't say anything and they have zero judgment. And, you can kind of really walk around empowered by that kind of freedom to know that it's okay, if that makes sense. I don't know how you felt in your time.
You know what? The first thought that came to mind is that I heard, "Oh, you are so big," or things like this, because my baby was 2 weeks late. So, so I think, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, that freedom for you, but I think it doesn't stop people to obviously comment like as if it
Oh,
matters if it's
yes.
big or not your bump. So,
Yeah,
but
completely.
yeah.
Because with my son, I look at photos and I'm like, oh, I look now and think, oh my, like, wow, I was humongous with him. And people would comment, like you say, and I think sometimes, as much as you're kind of at that late stage and you think, oh, can everyone just stop with their opinion? Oh, you're not had it yet. Oh, da da da, and all the different things. But as my like identity of who I inside felt was probably just confidence, really, and that kind of happiness and freedom. And then you have baby, and then nobody tells you that your bump remains at the beginning. And I don't know, do you have this image of, you have a baby and then you bounce back completely, because not everybody does. And I know that I think I kept my initial 1 stone baby weight for the next 10 years. So I've probably now got 2 stone baby weight additional. But
Nobody kind of always tells you about the long lasting effects
Gosh,
of
I
having a
totally
baby.
resonate. I remember when after giving birth, obviously I still had belly, so I remember that people were just like letting me in the queue because they thought I'm probably still pregnant where I was. So it was really funny when I remember that. But yeah, that's very true. Yes, it takes time to adjust. But there is this real identity split. Did you experience that? There's your old self, like you say, but there is the new you. You are becoming mom, but you are not yet fully mom because just having baby doesn't make, let's say, mom out of a woman. So yes, did you experience that identity split, that sense, that liminal space?
I think back then, not so much. I think back then it was more for me the overwhelming kind of loss of identity was the huge thing for me to mentally get over. And then feeling like confined and trapped within like four walls was a
Right.
big thing for me. And then body-wise, I think other than kind of the changes, I think the trying to breastfeed, and I really struggled with my first child. And there was no support. And as much as you go for appointments in like the midwives, and they're like, oh, are you going to breastfeed? Are you going to breast? Breast is best, you know. And there was like so much pressure back then, 11, 12 years ago. But then you have baby, and nobody tells you how to breastfeed. Nobody was there to guide or support or anything else. And so you're kind of left on a bit of a whim, or I was. And then I remember coming home, and not only have you got this like change in your world, but then it's like, I'm meant to be feeding this baby because that was the path I chose at that time. And then I remember just sitting on the bed. So for me, it was more about the change of my boobs, to be honest. That kind of day three when the milk kind of come in and you go a bit like, I don't know if you remember the Page Three model years ago, Katie Price Jordan, and you just felt like you had these bazookas attached to you. And the men are like, oh, and you're like, don't come near me. If you want to live, stay away. And just that pain and that kind of all the emotions and everything that went through it. And actually, I actually just give up on trying to breastfeed. I think maybe day 10, I think. And I remember just lying in the bed, and I didn't feel like I'd failed, because ultimately I just wanted my baby fed. You know, that's the main, the aim of the game, isn't it? You know, you want a baby to feed, and it doesn't matter how they get that food. And I looked at my husband as he walked through the hallway, and I looked out of the bedroom, and I said, get me a bottle. And he was like, what? I was like, get me a bottle. And that was it. That was the whole conversation and discussion. And then it was like, that was it. We just went to bottle. And then from there, I think once I took away feeling like I was the producer of that kind of, my body was all about feeding baby, I think that's when it sunk in a bit more, like, oh, well, what does my husband think of my body? Oh, everything's a little bit changed and different. What now? Does he feel? Or you look in the mirror. And I think once I'd taken myself away from that milk machine element, then I could then maybe appreciate a little bit more the changes in my body post birth.
Yes, definitely. All those changes, postpartum challenges, really, because that's what we are talking about. Yeah, they seem to be very much really intense. But this fades away, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Over
absolutely.
time.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, kind of, I've spoken to my husband about it in length, really. And just, I've said to him, take away all the crap. Like, just tell me straight, you know, just give me the honesty. I won't think any more or any less of you. He's got four children. So he's obviously been through the process a few times. And I think as women have the perception that, oh, they're not going to love us anymore. Oh, we've got wobbly bits. Oh, we've got stretch marks. Oh, we've got, you know, when we feel less confident in ourselves and our bodies, but they see us as sometimes a bit more wholesome, if that makes sense. It's like in awe that we've produced and kind of, you know, nurtured this little thing inside of us and kind of built this mini human and then birthed this human. And then it's kind of, well, his words is like, well, you're bound to change. You know, I expect you to change. You've evolved as a person. You're evolving as you kind of go through your however many pregnancies or babies that you do have.
Because what is interesting in your story, which you told me more about before this call, that you, because the listeners don't really know it yet by this time, that you are stepmom, you are obviously a new mom to as well, but you are at the same time an experienced mom, yes, because what's the age range of your children?
I've got two stepboys. One is called Oliver and he is 24. And there's Elliot, who is 17. Liliana is 11 and Jude is nearly two.
Wow, so that is quite, for me, it's almost like 360 parenting experience. And it's like so different. Like, for example, I am completely very, very new mom, okay, with one daughter, one girl. And I just feel that there is so much insight that you have as a mom who is already obviously more experienced, but also it is like different, let's call it setting. So can you maybe tell us a little bit more about what main challenges as a mother, as a mom in your parenting have you experienced, and how did you actually grow your confidence as a parent for all your children?
Yeah. Well, I think when you've got stepchildren, and anybody listening who has either currently got stepchildren or been a part of a family, extended family, I think those children were in my life before I had children. So I've been a stepmom to Oliver since he was 7 years old, 8 years old. So a very long time. So I've kind of grown up with them, so to speak. And I think it's a very different dynamic when you've got stepchildren because you're not mum and you're not trying to play the role of mum, but you have to be very mindful that you're also still an impact in their life. And so it's a very different journey because depending on what the relationship is like with their mum, because sometimes partners have very kind of turbulent relationships, sometimes they're a little bit smoother, and ours was quite rocky to begin with. Then yeah, you're kind of not wanting to rock the cart because you don't want to cause problems for your partner and then his ex, and then you don't want to kind of try and take over the role of mum. So it's a very different dynamic, and it's quite a fine line to kind of tread sometimes. And luckily, our end, over the years, me and their mum get on absolutely fine, and no problems, and we could sit down and have a chat for a couple of hours, and kind of we've got a very good relationship. But I do remember at the beginning being mindful because my mum and dad broke up when we were really, really young, and it was quite a abusive, toxic relationship that they had. And then they didn't ever talk, so there was no communication. And I just remembered that I didn't want that for my stepchildren, and so I was always very mindful that if there was a disagreement of some description, and I don't mean like a full-blown argument, I was always mindful that I would just take myself away from a situation. I wouldn't ever challenge anything because they're not my children. They're not there to see that environment or to be a part of that. So I think you paint, or we painted, or I painted a very different picture because I always wanted it to be a good, happy place for them to be because I was like the other woman, so to speak, if that makes sense, like not mum. And yeah, it's a very different approach. But then you bring into that, I suppose, kind of into parenthood. And I don't think being a stepmom really had an impact. But for me, touching on my childhood, my mom was a drug addict and my dad was quite angry. We'll call him angry man, very short fused. And so my mom would get rid of us on a weekend to my dad. And then we'd spend the weekend with my dad, who was just angry. And then I'm the eldest of five. So for me, I was always mum. So with all of my siblings, I was always the one who had to kind of get up with them in the morning, do their breakfast, babysit. I was in a very active mum role from a very, very young age. So I think for parenting myself, I think I brought into it everything I didn't want from my childhood. So I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate, even in the most perfect upbringing, with textbook kind of fairy tale upbringing where the parents are happily married and together forever. There's still also problems sometimes, but problems you wouldn't necessarily perceive. So I think any parenting journey is just so unique and so different, and the impacts we bring forward into our families. And I've probably lost a bit of track of where you wanted me to go with this conversation. So
Oh, that's fine. No,
what have
no.
I missed? Was it the
I was
conscious
just
parenting?
no. That's it's good. It's just yeah. I am so curious of the impact. But you just explained that because until now, what you said, I didn't even realize that you wouldn't call yourself even mom. So, I mean, like step mom is such a different relationship, and I don't personally, I haven't spoken to anyone about that. So what you say is quite an insight for me, that perspective. But me actually asking about parenting, what else I really would love to find out is that what, in your opinion, what does it mean to be a confident parent? Because there's a lot of conversation these days. When there is a new mom like me, obviously I am into personal development and I want to be the best parent I can whilst maintaining sense of authenticity and self. There is a lot of influence information around conscious parenting, awakened parenting, Dr. Shefali, gentle parenting, and all absolutely amazing, influential people sharing their wisdom. But I love stories, real stories. And to me, your story and the fact that you are in the role of being a step parent and also having two of your own at different ages, having that insight is, I think, is really priceless because it's talking from a real, a whole rounded experience. So based on that experience, or how would you finish the sentence? A confident parent in the modern world is a parent who.
Takes ownership of their own unique journey.
And what does that mean?
And ultimately, to me, that means like there are plenty of textbooks, but there is no ideal textbook to what a parent should be. And I feel like your confidence comes from taking actions that feel aligned with your values and what you feel is your instinct and should be right for your child, because you get that kind of gut feeling as a parent, I think, sometimes, and to know that it's okay to make mistakes. And I feel that as your children building their communication and understanding, it's also good to show them you make mistakes too, and why and how, and kind of having that, I suppose, conscious parenting where you're communicating with them and like, oh, well, I listened to this podcast, for example, and they said they try XYZ. And so we're going to try that at home. Now, you don't need to tell your child that, but let's just say you tried something and actually it really didn't feel right for how you wanted to parent. Then actually you're building your own confidence, because it's all about trial and error. Every stage and every season of parenthood is all about trial and error. And I think that confidence and that ability to be confident as a parent is empowering yourself to know that it's okay to fail. It's okay to know that parenting is not like unicorns and rainbows and all the fluffy stuff. It's the trials, the tribulations. It's that some days you just get through the days, and other days you're that parent who's on their hands and knees, and you've got the cars, or you're painting with them, and you're having fun with your children on their level. And all of that is all just building that confidence and connection to really have that strong connection ultimately with your child. And I think that gives you the confidence that you're being a good parent. You're being kind of, the right parent that your child needs, and not worry about what everybody else does, because your child is also so unique that they're kind of buckled in with you to kind of take this ride with you, and to, teach them from a young age that making mistakes is such a huge part of life.
Absolutely agree. It makes me think of those early days when she was an infant. And as a typical kind of researcher, me myself, I would just feed myself with education, with listening to things. And I remember at one point I had a conversation with my partner, and he was just like, hold on, you have the baby in front of you, that unique daughter, and it is about looking at exactly that, what she is needing, how is she, and obviously looking after her based on what she needs here and now, rather than searching for some general advice that is not tailored, obviously. And I think that could be the roadblock for many parents who, just like yourself, are very ambitious, achievement driven, like independent, and they love learning and growing. So we naturally look for certain answers, or we know that everything starts in self-confidence. Like I do believe that in order to be a truly confident parent, you need to be a confident human, self-confident. I think that's where it starts. But the thing is that parenting motherhood to me is such a delicate dance here, because it's so personal, it's so stepping into your identity that you can't compare it to absolutely anything else. And there is also that element that you know that you can be doing better, because especially as a self-developer, right, you know that well, if we couldn't do better, if there was no potential for better parenting, there wouldn't be parenting experts, right? So I think on one hand I agree that we know that it is all about being aware, conscious. There's a lot of conversation about this. It's about showing emotions, not hiding them. It's about teaching children that it is okay to be angry, it is okay to be this, and at the same time it is okay even to fight, but it's okay to then show them a model that there is agreement as well, there is the other side, so they have the whole spectrum. And I think that's great, but I think we kind of still look for the ways of, I believe it is more about minimizing maybe negative impact and maybe understanding, because even when I scroll Facebook and stuff, I see so many like scarcity-based posts are showing me pictures of even like impact of TV screen, what happens with the brain, child development, and there is so much heavy guilt around TV screen and certain ideas of what we choose on a daily basis as parents. And I think that is what, regardless of level of confidence, we just are impacted by this and then start to question, like, what can I do to maybe reduce impact of this, because I start to believe that maybe I am doing something wrong if I allow TV screen, and not just 20 minutes, far more than that, you know what I mean? It's just like, so if I personally feel this is fine because I am observing my baby, I am mindful, I'm seeing how she is she happy, is she not, but also taking care of my mental health first and foremost.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, there's such a dance, that's what I call it. I think you also mentioned that it's just so much about balancing. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I think this is that sweet spot we all as parents, new parents, especially when we're so new to it, we don't yet know how to redefine the sweet spot because we are clearly only starting that journey.
And I think I'm no professional and expert in regards to screen time and that long-term effect, but what I can take from that, from a mum perspective, not even as a, you know, a coach in any way, shape or form, is absolutely you need to use it how you need to use it. And touching on your mental health, for example, if you need a break and it is all too much and it is massively overwhelming, then absolutely put a movie on if you need to put a movie on, or screen time of whatever variation. I think the pressure that social media puts on everybody, whether it is regarding parenting or anything else, it's all the glossy stuff. It's all, we're out in nature, we're doing this, this is the child development, this is the algorithms and everything else pick up on all of those things. So sometimes, depending on what we're looking at, we'll obviously then determine what then pops up on our screens. And I think there is that balance, and even if you take away that balance, it's just, again, goes back to that gut instinct. You do what you need to do. And I'm a firm believer that children need time on their own and for them to explore boredom. That's when they are most creative, and that's when they truly ignite things inside of them, where they can role play maybe what they've learned or what they've seen us do. The amount of times I'd come in and my daughter's playing with her Barbies and I'd hear her say different comments and things, and I think, oh god, that's me, like she must have picked that up from me, and you don't even realize what you're saying. So for me, like, when I've reached my limit, the finger comes out and it's like, enough. And it's very, it's not even angry, it's not shouty. The word enough is like the trigger in my house for everybody of like, limits have been met. And you know, kind of hearing her role play that with her Barbies was just quite amusing in a certain way. But if I am feeling like it's all too much, and with Jude being so little, he's not really like, he doesn't mind screen time, but it doesn't, he's not that interested. But where we live and we have a bungalow, I'm able to let him out the front door, as in he opens it himself, and it's a safe, secure area up front. But I can stand in my bedroom and overlook the garden, and he can have that freedom to explore. And I guess he feels that independence, and that, you know, he can do whatever he wants to do within reason. but I'm able to take that time away and be able to maybe drink my tea in peace and quiet. And I think, you know, if you take away all of the input, and sometimes it is, you know, you have to be mindful about not allowing yourself to read all the negative and the negative, you know, because it's so easily done, isn't it? It's so easily done. And then we question ourselves, am I doing this wrong? Should I be doing this? Should I? No, mom. You take what you need to do when you need to do it, because if you're not okay, then everything around you is going to crumble.
Yeah, I definitely firmly stand for it, to be honest. And I think initially I felt more guilty about that. To be honest with you, I don't think I felt probably ever guilty for taking time for myself because I knew how much I love it. Sometimes when I have a lot of the time for myself, I want even more. So it's not that way. Yeah, take this out of me now because I drink that old water that I just filled my glass with. No, I want more water in the glass. But yeah, I think it is so incredibly important. Yes, because be a good parent really starts in really how we are actually treating ourselves, doesn't it? Yeah. And actually, going back to what you said, I was thinking about typical myths that are still there, and we believe that they are true, but they are myths. What do you consider the biggest myths around parenting?
Yeah, so it's a really, really good and interesting and thought-provoking question, which is, I'm sure, why you absolutely asked it. And I feel that, you know, I touched on kind of parenting not being this unicorn and rainbows and fluffy clouds and stuff before, which I think can be a bit of a myth. But also, don't be fooled by social media, because the majority of it is fake, ultimately. I think one of the biggest myths is around, probably for me, about perceiving asking for help as a weakness. To me, I feel that's quite important, because I guess as a personal journey, we don't have support. We don't have a support network. So my mum is very abusive and not healthy, so I don't have a relationship with her. My dad is probably the least paternal person in the world, and although I have a relationship with him and he's a lovely guy, he's not very good on dad duties, let alone granddad duties. So, and my husband's parents have both died, so we just don't and never have had a network. And I guess for me, I'd love to be able to say I need help, but I can't, because there isn't anybody to say help me, you know, in a kind of family unit. And so I guess then it's that perceived weakness of I'm not doing okay. And I guess if I reflect back to a time with my mum when we did have communication, because she wasn't getting what she wanted, she threatened to call social services on me. And I remember there was not one reason for social services to be interested or involved. However, that fear of, am I doing everything okay? Like, what can I be picked up on as a bad mum, or what am I doing wrong, or whatever it may be. And I remember going to the doctors with, you know, the red book that you get for the babies. And I went in and I said, you know, to the doctor, can you go through everything in the book? And she just looked at me, and I was like, well, I've been threatened with social services, and I don't want them to come back and say that I'm not a good mum, or I'm not doing what I'm meant to have done. And she just looked at me and was like, are you okay? And clearly at the time, I was probably a little bit manic, really, because of that fear of having my baby taken away from me. And the rational side of that is there was absolutely no reason other than her being toxic. But that fear then stems into the, I suppose, weakness for me of, well, if I ask for help, they're going to say I'm not being a good mum, or I'm not doing what I should be doing to kind of provide all of our needs. So I felt like, kind of, yeah, the biggest myth around the parenting is showing your weakness. And it's not a weakness at all, but a power for us to be able to reach out.
Yeah, we don't have any support network, and I feel that there is so much impact of that in how you really enjoy motherhood, because it is meant to be a village. It is meant to be a shared experience. It's never been that difficult time like now to be a mother, because it's isolating. It's lack of that support network. The way people live these days, there's not that classic village. Like I said, that shared experience, and that really massively impacts our joy in that, and how difficult it is. So asking for help, as support, is to me such an important part But it's easy when you maybe have family. But I have very similar situation that we don't have here parents. And since beginning, the weight of parenting was just between two of us, which is a lot of pressure on your parents. But going back to also those myths, what I like doing, I would just literally type it in Google and just to see what it would say, because sometimes I find absolutely ridiculous answers. but there is something interesting that come up, and I wonder what's your take on this. Some of the top ones, myths about parenting. It says that if your kids aren't happy, something is very wrong. That's the myth. Another myth,
nice.
Good parents put their kids' needs first. And I think that is something that I think is very, very interesting. Yeah. So myth is good parents put their kids' needs first, not their needs. And I think that is such a powerful myth to challenge or what is your take on that?
So I think a lot of it, I suppose, can come down to like the age and stage of your children. So I think when they're younger, obviously it's a little bit trickier to not take their needs into consideration as a first. So if we look at that kind of newborn phase, ultimately they don't survive without us, do they? You know? So I think as we go through the transition of ages, and then if I looked in reflection to say my 11-year-old now, in comparison to that young child or infant, she's quite self-sufficient to a certain degree. You know, she could be in her room for a couple of hours and I wouldn't be thinking, is she still breathing? You know, so while she's in her room, I could then do whatever I needed to do, whether that's have a shower, have a bath, read a book, sit in the garden with a cup of tea or a glass of wine and, like, you know, soak up the last bit of sunshine, or, you know, all of those different things. So that's very much putting my needs first. But I don't think I'm abandoning her by doing that at all. But then if I go to like my child now, Jude, who's nearly two, I definitely could not do all of those things, because he definitely probably would end up in some serious trouble. So I think that's that, like, again, the fine line and the balance of putting the child first. But for me, I very much schedule me time. It's in the diary, because
lovely.
My life is chaotic. Chaos is good chaos, and I thrive on chaos. And that's just me as a person. And probably because of my traumatic upbringing, there was always stuff. Although it's not traumatic and chaotic in a negative way now, I think I'm used to just chaos. And that's okay. But I've lost my track of thought. But along the lines of kind of, you
needs.
Know,
I think it is about
needs.
Balance. Like
it's,
I said, again, I think that it is in every aspect area of life that the best answer is actually, it's not about black or white ever with anything.
No,
it's all about
no,
finding
not at
sweet
all.
Spot, but not sweet spot that media and even experts tell you, sweet spot defined by you on your terms.
Yes, and your family and your needs. And yeah, absolutely. Taking, reining myself back in. So that time is in my diary because of my life being chaotic and everybody and the age gaps and everything. If something is in the diary, it happens. And if something is just spoken about, it doesn't happen, because something else fills that gap. And so when I had Jude this time round, and reflecting back on kind of matrescence, but for round two, I was very aware of how I felt after my first child. And I made sure everything was in place. Like, I went back to college on an evening course because I needed to have that identity of, you know, I am doing this for me, around other human beings that aren't talking babies particularly or anything else. And so moving forward, and as time's progressed, I very much have, whether it's a holiday, and for me, I've just come away from a weekend with the girls and they were like, oh, are you missing the babies? I was like, no. And they just looked at me really funny. I said, no, because they're with their dad. He's a great dad. He's absolutely got it sorted. You know, this is like, it's not a test run with him. He knows what he's doing. The kids are happy, safe, content. They're having their needs met by him. I can absolutely switch off. So no, right now, I'm not missing my children, which sounds awful, but it's allowing yourself to do that.
No. I mean, like, and that's the thing. We always need to, like, add, like, Oh, but I love my kids. Oh, it sounds, but it sounds awful. But yeah, that's what it is. That's part of this kind of cultural programming that it would be crazy to maybe blame ourselves for that or feel bad for that because, no, let's be honest, years and years and years and years, or certain cultural narrative, which you didn't even realize you have until you become mom. I mean, especially if you. If you question that, then you maybe are even aware, but so many people don't even question. Yes, yeah? So we step into motherhood and we never really question, like, what are my real beliefs about motherhood? What, in my opinion, being good mom is, or good parent, and based on what I shape those beliefs. And very often it is purely on a subconscious level. It just sink into us, and so I think there's a lot to look into that to reveal a certain. Would you agree to reveal really where you are with this? What is potentially be holding your confidence back, or maintaining that self-doubt? Because I have the impression that with parenting these days in the modern world, is that okay? Education information is there. Willingness to learn to grow is there. It is all there, but things like, self-doubt, cultural programming, this is something that needs to be unlocked, redefined in order for us to truly stand in our own way. Yeah, isn't it? So,
Yeah, and I think even sometimes what we don't really realize is that, I mean, we haven't got our parents particularly close to us, but for people who have got their parents close by who want an active role with their grandchildren, I think that pressure
Oh, yeah.
from your parents on how you should parent
Oh my
and,
gosh, yeah.
kind of, even that impact sometimes is so much
Yeah.
and can really make you doubt yourself. And
Agree.
that's
Yeah.
because you love your mum, you respect your mum. Most people have a positive relationship with their parents. And so to have them there and for you to feel validated by your parents on your own parenting style, I think can also have a huge detrimental effect on parents.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is something that I remember I was having so many conversations with new moms when my baby was very little. And yeah, I was saying that, yeah, I actually don't have support, but it might be actually a good thing because me battling ideas and forcing like what's right, what's wrong, yeah, with parents who may have different perspective, level of awareness and everything in between, to how I see it, may cause just potential tension and making it actually unnecessarily difficult. So better maybe not even have that in life and actually parent by yourself. Sometimes you need to actually weigh it, what works better for you. I wanted just towards the end, just ask you a question about if you can share what free tips or tools could you share to help new moms build confidence as parents?
So I think I've touched on a couple of them during kind of the conversation, but just to kind of re-summarize on, the building that confidence, education is readily available, like you say. And, I'd just like to take this moment to congratulate anybody who is listening to the podcast, because these are kind of the parents and the mums who are very much reaching out to listen to and kind of, spend their time to see whether something maybe we have said aligns with them and maybe they want to try out. And, that education. So, well done to those parents and ourselves who go out there to do that. It's a really important factor. But also, whether it is reaching out to a coach or a therapist, even. So, a coach and a therapist is very, very different. But sometimes we have those traumas, ACEs, as they call it in school, kind of where ultimately, we've gone through experiences in life which will have an effect on how we move forward. And, it's working out different ways that you can overcome those that might build your confidence internally with something, a hurdle that you need to get over, for example. So sometimes you do need to kind of get that additional support that you might not necessarily take from a textbook, but there is no right book. So that education of, is it an audio? Is it a podcast of some description or, a YouTube video? And just look at what's out there and really allow yourself to go through the trial and error process. Try something. If it doesn't work for you and your family, then that's okay. And as you, if your children are old enough, they'd be like, oh, well, we tried that and did we like it? And you can communicate about things and work out what you really like as a family. And so, yeah, the education side is really, really important. But also a tool that I find really, really helpful is journaling. So not everybody is into journaling, and you can call it whatever you like, writing notes, your mood diary, your, you know, if we called it a mood diary, it might be a bit better, because I think sometimes as mums, even if we've got active partners, you don't always want to talk about, you know, what's gone on in your day, or, you know, and sometimes we carry a lot of weight as parents about all sorts, absolutely all sorts, you know, did they have their five vegetables today, which in reality is that completely feasible all the time. But some people really get that mum guilt about things like that. So if you can journal and just reflect on what went well today, what can I actually give myself a pat on the back for? You know, what did I achieve for myself today? Are the kids happy today? Am I happy today? And if something that you're not too sure on, you can actually just, you know, is it like the three or five whys? If you can ask yourself why three or five times, you're going to really get to like deeper levels to really understand something you may have wrote down actually might be something completely different by the time you've got to the third or fourth, five why on the situation. So yeah, having just the ability to offload. And sometimes for me, I'll get into bed and my brain is going 10 to the dozen about all sorts, whether that's what we've got to do the next day. And I will literally pick up my phone, open my notes, and I will like dump, screen dump. I will just take whatever is in my brain into my notes, and then I close it. And you know what? Most of the time, I don't even look back on it. But it's just that ability to offload. And then I actually have such a better night's sleep, unless the baby wakes me up. But, you know, it's just that ability to really get in it off your chest. And if it is a really bad time, and actually you do want to just have a safe space to write stuff, another great tip is to write to your heart's content everything, no matter how bad or good or all in everything in between. And then like burn it, shred it, dispose of it. Just, you know, kind of, I personally enjoy to like, I wrote a letter to my mum, for example, and then I wanted to be rid of that. So I done a really big journal kind of part. I burnt that. And then I actually watched the ashes disappear. And it was just this weight and release that just lifted. So that's a really kind of a big one for myself. And I think, you know, again, it's really that acknowledgement that parenting is a unique journey, to be compassionate with yourself, that whatever your friend's doing isn't going to be the same as you. If your child is meeting different milestones, that's not because you're inadequate in any way. It's because your child is completely unique. That kind of understanding and empathy with yourself, that however your parenting journey maps out, as long as you know you did your best with what you had at the time, then that's all you can take from it, and that you're enough. You are enough as you are, and you are more than you think you are, ultimately.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you for this. I definitely agree with that journaling, because that is definitely part of my routine now. At one point, I felt so disconnected. I just felt this on a physical level, that I need more deep connection with myself, just to see what's going on in my mind. Because until you put this on paper, you don't know really. And you also, it creates that really nice bonding with yourself, but it can be just audio journaling. There are apps where on the go, as busy moms, we know that we sometimes just don't have time to even take a piece of paper and write. But maybe we can record our voice. There is audio version of journaling. There is really great app called Morning Pages, which is so easy, just like so easy to write. Of course, simple notes, things like this. Yeah, I think can help. And of course, what you are doing. So scheduling, maybe when the baby goes to sleep, yes, you actually schedule it. So that you will actually make sure that you stick to it, because we all know if it's not there, it just won't happen. Like you said.
Yeah. Also, just for myself, like it took me a very long time to be comfortable with writing, because I never felt that I had any privacy. Mm-hmm. So, when you're opening that vulnerability sometime and being that kind of raw, whether that's on paper, audio, or wherever it is, I never felt like anything was safe to be there. So it's sometimes a barrier that we don't really acknowledge and realize ourselves until we have that time and ability to sit and just be. So it actually took journaling to identify what my fear of journaling was, which was
Yeah,
just an interesting
absolutely.
perspective.
And when it comes to becoming that confident parent, aspiring to have more confidence around your way, because it's about your way, is actually journaling on this. Because I think one thing is journaling and willingness, another also the questions. It's great to reflect on what was great about today. But yeah, when you want to look closer about what really doubt around your parenting and the sort of questions, around that, what would be a good question to journal on?
There was an episode that you then shouted at the child, for example. So you've kind of lost your temper and you're like, what are you doing? Or whatever it may be. You know, it doesn't have to be a really big shout or anything, but and then you feel a mum going, oh, I shouldn't have raised my voice or whatever it may be. And then you'd be like, right, okay, so let's work backwards. So what did the baby do or the child do that made me angry? So it could be something really, really small, something really big, but whatever, they weren't sitting still or they didn't, whatever it may be. And then backtrack. Okay, so was that actually as bad as I thought it was? You know, why did I think what the child was doing was so bad? And then it'd be kind of work backwards. Okay, so actually what the child did wasn't that bad. Why did I shout?
I
And
think what
then you might not have an answer, don't get me wrong, but you're kind of working backwards. And then actually what you might just really identify is that it's tea time. The house is now upside down, bedtime's around the corner, the baby's just threw his food on the floor, and now you've got another thing to tidy up.
I think something that is absolutely empowering for us mums is to know that the reason why we lose our temper and have nerves and show anger and all shadow of us is because our needs are not met. So it's
Yeah,
not really
absolutely.
about kids. It's not really because if you are well rested, had good sleep and stuff, you probably won't shout or not shout that often, right? So it
And
is
that's where I'm
that.
getting to with the journaling, because actually all you are
Exactly.
identifying is what you're lacking. So the more you work backwards, it's what is the stem of that, which is you, because you have a need that needs to be met.
To finish this, we are running a bit longer, but that's lovely because it's just nice conversation. Is if you were asked to be a speaker at TED conference, what would you talk about? You have 20 minutes, one message to the world.
I think that probably stems to my brand and the authenticity around my brand and I am more, because I've touched on my upbringing, which I would tell my story and share my story. And it was when I was at a Tony Robbins event and done the fire walk and learned about kind of your state and how to change your state and be in control of empowering yourself, that he asked a question about what is your mission? What is your purpose? And in that moment, it was very much to empower a child just like me to know that they are enough and they are more. And I found this note and it literally sent goosebumps all over me, because as a child, my needs weren't met and I was never enough. And as an adult, I am more. I can be more. I am more than my parents. I am more than my situation. I am more than my upbringing. And I basically, following my mission and my passion, which is to empower whether it's parents, whether it's teenagers, whether it's children themselves, to know that they are enough and they are more. And it is so, so important to me.
Oh, and it's absolutely important to put that message out to the world, which you are already doing. Thank you so much for
Thank
being my
you.
guest and for having that great conversation. I think we could have more and more time for that because I feel that whenever we talk about certain aspect, it just opens up another route to talk about. Anyways, can you tell us where listeners can find you online?
Yes, so probably I would say the best place to come and find me would be my Instagram. Will the handle, it's at I hyphen am hyphen more
More.
hyphen coach. I am more coach. From there, you can find me in all the other places.
Okay, lovely. Thank you so much again for a lovely chat. And yes,
No, thank you.
keep changing the world and inspiring parents to be more than
Thank
and
you.
enough. Thank you so
Thank you.
much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining me, Mama. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to leave me a review and subscribe to be notified when the next episode drops. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me over at Instagram, where my handle is at firestartermom. Looking forward to see you back here soon for our next chat. Bye for now!